Extreme Rules is in the books. We have a new Universal Champion. And Bray Wyatt finally debuts. Your full Raw and Extreme Rules review show starts right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. Your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Extreme Rules 2019 is now complete. Monday Night Raw is now complete, and as I am speaking and recording this, WWE SmackDown Live is on the air, so I'll be doing a review show for that tomorrow night. And then Thursday, of course, I will have my co-host Ashley join me to discuss all of the just too much to talk about. And that's an awesome thing. That's a good problem to have. WWE has certainly given us a wide range of topics to talk about, and not all rants. A lot of praise to go around, and I will get to that, including some email questions, and that'll be a lot of fun. But first, a little bit of sad news on the home front. No, nobody died, but Jeff Hardy, if you haven't already heard, has been he was arrested for public drunkenness in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, ended up paying bail, and has subsequently been released from jail. WWE subsequently has put out a press release saying that Jeff Hardy is basically responsible for his own actions and is going to take care of it and resolve it himself. Not a good look for WWE, the exact opposite of what they are looking for in WWE performers, stars, wrestlers, and it just reflects poorly in the company and just adds to the stereotype that you have a drug-ridden staff or performers, right? But Jeff Hardy has had a long history of battling drugs, not just alcohol, but painkillers, weed, and many others. And so this is not too much of a surprise, but to my knowledge, Jeff Hardy has been relatively clean since he re-debuted in WWE at WrestleMania 33 with his brother Matt, and they went on to win the tag team titles that night. I was there. So it was sad to see because, you know, obviously Jeff is still going through things and his demons have returned. But, I mean, I don't think WWE is going to release him on this. It's a very, very minor offense, but it just reflects poorly on a company that's all about their image and the brand that they like to present of squeaky clean, and all the charity work that they do is certainly tainted by a story like this. You know, maybe they end up not opting to renew Jeff Hardy's contract whenever that may expire. And so, again, it's just a little bit discouraging for Jeff Hardy, and I won't talk too much more about it other than to say, listen, if you're giving out tickets being drunk in Myrtle Beach, over the course of my life, I probably should have been in jail many a night. That is a fun place to be. I went to college there for a semester. Notice I said a semester. A, that's singular. So it's a fun place. Again, that doesn't excuse Jeff Hardy for public intoxication. Apparently he passed out in a stairwell, this and that. Listen, how many people are drunk in Myrtle Beach? Thousands every night. Thousands. Unfortunately, when you're a WWE superstar, you have to hold yourself at a higher regard, at a higher standard. And if you're going to drink, don't do it in excess, or do it well. As the old saying goes, be good or be good at it. And Jeff was neither. So, okay. Let's move on to something more positive, and that is Extreme Rules. We're going to get to Monday Night Raw with Bray Wyatt debuting. Very, very well done, and I'll get to my thoughts on that in a Raw that I felt was very, very well put together, very structured. But first, I want to go over Extreme Rules. As a whole, I felt like Extreme Rules delivered. And my apologies for not being able to live tweet through the show. You guys know my life is nuts with a kid and a wife and a house and a full-time job and everything else, so I watch a lot of stuff on delay. I wish I could be live on Twitter more with pay-per-views, and interact with you guys. Sometimes I'm able to. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to this time around, but no, have no fear. With WWE, there's a pay-per-view every 2 weeks, so you get your shot, you know, twice a month. So with SummerSlam, what, August 11th? That seems super early this year, by the way. I mean, I've seen it into late August, so this is probably the earliest I can remember SummerSlam being. So, you know, but I'm not complaining, and I'm sure the writers aren't complaining that they don't have to drag out storylines for, you know, 4 or 5 weeks and make things feel as if, like, hey, let's just get to the match. I'm sure a shorter time frame is better, especially when you have 3 hour Raws. So this is something that I'm sure the writers are happy about. But again, you know, I wish I could be more live with you guys. I really do. But I was able to catch up throughout yesterday and today from Extreme Rules to Monday Night Raw and now SmackDown Live. So WWE has put up a 4 hour pay per view, a 3 hour Monday Night Raw, and a 2 hour SmackDown Live. So that's 9 hours of content, if I did my math right. 9 hours of content in 3 days. That's a hell of a lot. That's why, like, that's the equivalent of having a Monday Night Raw 3 days in a row, when you do the math on that, 3, 3, and 3. So I'm doing my best. When I'm not on Twitter, I apologize. It's not radio silence because I don't care. It's radio silence because I physically have no time to watch it at that moment. So anyway, with that out of the way, I want to talk more about Extreme Rules and start right off here. I'm going to start right at the big talking point, and that is Brock Lesnar winning the Universal Championship against Seth Rollins, or beating Seth Rollins, cashing in his Money in the Bank briefcase, and ending up regaining his Universal Championship. He's now holding it hostage once again. It's the nightmare that just keeps reliving itself. It's like waking up in a dream. You ever have a dream that you woke up and you're still in the dream? It's like we've done that 3 times now, where you think Brock Lesnar's lost the Universal Championship and he only regains it to regain it to regain it. And we're back in the nightmare. However, I feel that Seth Rollins, while he was a good champion, was not a great champion, at least in this particular run. He didn't have that energy, that fire. He was more worried about doing comedy skits and trying to show his human side and his relatable side of trying to connect with fans, of being cutesy with his girlfriend backstage. I really think that that whole thing kind of hurt Seth Rollins. But to put a positive spin on it, Seth Rollins' fire that he showed after Baron Corbin gave Becky Lynch the End of Days, which, bravo WWE. Listen to this. Hear that? That's a round of applause, a standing ovation, for WWE having the balls to have a male retaliate against a female. Now, I understand the context in which they did it, and the announcers all denounced it as despicable. It's a heel attacking a female babyface. So I know why they did it. They did it in a way that was meant to be booed, and you're having a heel do it, which makes it even more despicable and more appalling. I loved it. I loved it because it showed that WWE is not afraid to go there now and then when warranted. And Lacey Evans, by the way, is just allowed to wail on Seth Rollins and he's not allowed to retaliate. How many times are we going to see this? It's preposterous that you have this happening. So I applaud WWE for having the balls to go there again. So bravo to them. And Seth Rollins, who, it's like he was awoken. He was, and not woke for you millennials, not woke, that I hate that term. He was awoken inside. The fire was ignited on the inside of him that I've been searching for and waiting to see. It's finally been lit. And it took was him to have his significant other physically attacked. And it set Rollins off on another level. And I love that. The look in his eye I have never seen in his entire career. In all the programs he's been in, with Triple H, with Randy Orton, you name it. I've never seen that fire in him, and I loved it. It was believable. It was relatable. It was living vicariously through him. I mean, regardless of what relationship you're in, if you're a man and you feel protective over your female, if you saw another man attack your woman, you would want to beat the holy hell out of him. I mean, that's just the natural human reaction. And so that was a nice touch to a real moment, and it made you feel something. And I loved that part of Seth Rollins that I have not seen yet. So it's like the fire came too late because it was immediately extinguished by Brock Lesnar coming out to cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase. I was surprised Seth didn't put up a little bit more of a fight. And I know that even though Brock was going to win, have Seth get in a little bit of offense, just a little, instead of German, F5, goodnight the lights. I'm a little bit tired of that rhetoric or that that routine. It's go for the offensive move. Brock moves out of the way, and you get German. One more German, and then you get an F5. It's a little redundant. I would have liked to see Seth at least kick out of one F5, and then Brock be stunned and frustrated and hit him with it again, and then he gets pinned. For him to lose to one F5, I know he just went through a grueling match, but Seth was standing at the time that Brock Lesnar came into the ring. I don't know. Just a little bit of a touch there would have been nice, that Seth is showing some just to fight till the end. So I liked that as well. You saw the fire from Seth, but I wasn't too thrilled with the offensive prowess that Seth Rollins showed against Brock, which was zero, next to nothing. And Brock Lesnar walks out champion. So Brock Lesnar is now champion in a title run that was starting to get a little boring because I felt like Seth was going nowhere and just continuously feuding with Baron Corbin over and over and over again. And now that these two are gone from the title picture with Seth Rollins, yay. And Becky Lynch and I believe Lacey Evans are now officially done as well. Clearly shown by the events of Monday Night Raw, and we'll get to that as well. So, but the match overall, I think, was very good. I enjoyed Seth Rollins. I enjoyed Becky Lynch as a team. I think they worked well. They got their cute little color-coded outfits. Okay, fine. You guys are into that stuff. I'm not really into attire so much. But it was a nice physical match. Back and forth. It was fine. Brock Lesnar coming out at the end. I can't believe I didn't predict that. I felt like a total idiot for not coming up with that. I really felt like a fool. Felt like a total fool. Okay, moving along. Next topic is Undertaker and Roman Reigns versus Shane McMahon and Drew McIntyre. I really believe that this was the best Undertaker has looked since he has been on his kind of on-again, off-again routine for the last couple of years. And that includes WrestleMania performances. Yes, he, of course, was able to lean on Roman Reigns for the heavy lifting. And it gave Undertaker rest. It kind of hit him a little bit in a tag match. It dispersed the workload. Everything that Undertaker needs at this point in his career. So he fit very nicely into that. He gets the hot tags. Is he a step or two or three or four slower than he was at his prime? Of course. And it was still noticeable? Yes. I'm not saying he looked like Undertaker of old. He didn't. I wouldn't go as far as what Michael Cole said. But he looked serviceable. He didn't look embarrassing. Yes, he had a little bit of a mix-up with the tombstone with Shane at the end. Outside of that small blunder, it was a fairly flawless match for a 50-plus-year-old Undertaker who is hanging on and hanging in there. But what really stuck out to me in this match was not even the match itself. It was Michael Cole's commentary. And that's a good thing. I'm not about to trash Michael Cole. Michael Cole, at the end of the match, if you guys listened, I'm sure you did, mentioned that, hey, you don't know how many more times you're going to get to see this. Enjoy it. And when Undertaker won, he said, and they said the dead man was finished. Meaning, after the abomination that was Goldberg and Undertaker, many people said, oh my God, Undertaker is totally done. Get him out of the ring. Make him retire. All that. I wasn't totally on that bandwagon. I've just felt that Undertaker has generally needed to retire over the last 5 years. And I mean it with all due respect. But it was WWE's statement to the fans, hey, Undertaker can still kind of go. And you have no idea how much longer you're going to see him. You have very limited time. We're giving you a heads up that every single time Mark Calloway is in the ring, you need to take note and just appreciate the fact that he is in the ring because it will not be much longer. I think they gave us a bit of a hint there, as we've all suspected for a long time now. I mean, we've been predicting, I've been predicting the WWE fans, notice I didn't say WWE Universe, the WWE fans have been predicting for the last 15 years. And I think that it is finally going to be time for Undertaker. My prediction is still WrestleMania 37 next year, not this year. When I say this year, I mean the upcoming WrestleMania. So it'll be 2021 in which Undertaker will retire officially, is my prediction. But that was their wink and nod to tell fans, look, we know Undertaker isn't what he used to be, but appreciate him for what he is right now, because it is not going to be much longer. And I think we should all take that attitude. We could, you know, we could say, oh, he's not the man he used to be. Nobody is. You add 15, 20 years to anybody, they're not going to be the person they were. But you're not, you know, at this point, I don't want to look at Mark Calloway as a shell of the man he was. And in ring performance wise, yeah, he's definitely a step 2, 3, 4 behind what he was. But I appreciate them and The Undertaker still willing to go at the best possible performance that he can put out there at his age and the injuries that he's had. Jim Ross likened him to Frankenstein at this point with all the surgeries he's had. So I think we all just need to take a step back and realize the dead man's not going to be here much longer. Every appearance is special. Every match is special. And we need to realize he is not going to be here forever. So that's what I'd like to say about that. And thank the Lord that Undertaker and Roman Reigns won and Shane McMahon got tombstoned. Bravo. Yay. Let's move on from Shane McMahon winning matches. Please. Please. Okay. Now on to Bobby Lashley and Braun Strowman. Physical. It felt different. It's a false count anywhere. And that's what I liked about them billing it as a false count anywhere. They actually went through and executed it as a false count anywhere. They made it feel like a false count anywhere. Different from a street fight, which is different from no DQ, apparently. But false count anywhere means you can literally pin your opponent anywhere. And they made that true to form. And I appreciate that, because that's not always the case with a falls count anywhere. It's typically maybe ringside, you know, maybe off the stage, but it's always in front of the audience. Well, why does it have to be? Make it backstage. And they did. Boy, did they take some lumps. They have to be so sore, and particularly Bobby Lashley has to be feeling like he was hit by an 18-wheeler. Some of the bumps he took, yikes. I know he's a jacked dude. I don't care. Concrete wins every time. Every time. It's got a perfect record against the human body. And the bump that he took from Braun Strowman when he was overhead belly to belly, or no, suplexed rather. It was suplexed into the merchandise stand, but it just landed Bobby Lashley flat. He bounced off it, but kind of landed vertically. Oh, wow. I mean, some of the beatings that he took, I mean, with inanimate objects and just when you're out there in the concourse of an arena taking bumps on that. I mean, yeah, it wasn't flat back bumps, but man, I don't care. Some of the things they did were crazy. And yes, the finish was, of course, a planned spot in a very nice, comfy, cozy, to the best of their ability, set up a mocked stage in that part of the arena, and that's fine. And Braun Strowman was to be the man coming out, bursting through the wall, you know, as the count was nearing 10. And that's fine, whatever. I'll go with the smoke and mirrors part of it. Whatever, it's cool. Let's move on. You know, but overall, look, I think that was a defining match for Bobby Lashley, something he can build off of, something that he can just gain a little bit of traction with and just keep things going with this. I mean, does it have to be with Braun Strowman? No, it doesn't have to be. You could build off this. You really can. As bland as his personality can be at times, vanilla as it can be, and all the Three Sisters nonsense that was just god-awful, all of that can be forgotten with something like this, because the fans see the sacrifice that you put out there. They see the dedication that you have and the bumps that you take and the all of that. Like, fans see that and they respect that. They could eventually turn Bobby back to babyface with something like this. But I'm enjoying him as a heel. Keep him a heel. And you could do something with this. Don't let this pass Bobby Lashley by. That's all I'm saying. Yes, he lost the match. So what? Fans don't remember so much as who won and lost that match. In my mind, fans remember the brutality of that match and the men that were in that match killing each other. That's what's going to be remembered. Okay, the next match on the card here is Finn Balor and Shinsuke Nakamura. And I didn't even have this in my predictions because, correct me if I'm wrong, they probably added this at the last minute. Nonetheless, we had Shinsuke Nakamura defeat Finn Balor to win the IC title as Finn Balor continues his grand slide into the abyss, at least for now. But it was clean. It was a clean victory from Nakamura to get the win. So fine with it. I think Nakamura also needs a shot in the arm. And it could also do wonders for the Intercontinental Championship if Nakamura is presented correctly. My recommendation, if I was in any kind of role or position to provide some creative direction, I would try to erase the last year and a half from the minds of wrestling fans of what Nakamura has done, been booked as, and has happened. I would go back to New Japan. Show him in his prime. Show him at his best. Get an interview with him. Maybe have him sit down. This could be a way to reignite Shinsuke Nakamura. I understand the belt is not supposed to make the man. The man is supposed to make the belt. I understand all that. But in this case, Shinsuke Nakamura is such a great talent that I feel like he has never been properly utilized or shown his true potential in WWE. And this could be his chance once again to do that. So throw us some video packages. Throw us a sit-down interview. Whether you, I mean, it's clear that they're trying to book him as a heel, I think. But whatever role he's in, give us some video. Re-educate us. Hit the reset button. This is your chance with Shinsuke. Do it now. Don't just give us, oh, Shinsuke, you know, he gives, you know, quick one or two word promos, or he no speak in English, as funny as that is. I wouldn't do that. I would give him depth. Right now, he's very one-dimensional, very entrance-heavy, and very Kinshasa-heavy. I need a Shinsuke that has depth. And you do that by building up his persona, building up who he is, a backstory. Where is he, why is he here again? Remind us. Or tweak it a little. This is your chance. Okay. Let's move on to the Cruiserweight Championship match, Drew Gulak and Tony Nese. Gulak defeated Nese. Gulak ultimately, he reversed an attempt at a sunset driver by Nese into a powerbomb, and he put him away with the pinfall victory. So I really, honestly, like, it was a good match, and I don't think that this is a match that anyone's going to remember or honestly talk about beyond this, a review show such as this one. And I mean no disrespect to these guys, because I think the 205 Live 205 Live roster has gotten the shaft for the most part and not presented in the correct way. And with 3 hours of Raw, you think they'd find a way to do that, and they haven't. But this is a rivalry that could be something beyond what's inside the ring. Right now, it's pretty much inside the ring they do the storytelling, and that, you know, that's fine. I don't always need the A-plus promo. Some guys tell their stories better in the ring, and that seems to be the case here. So congratulations to Drew Gulak. Okay, next match on my review is the Usos versus the Revival, a match that I predicted the Usos would win and capture the Raw Tag Team Championships. Why? Because the Revival are outright boring. I understand there are Revival fans out there. Oh, you've seen them in NXT. They were okay. Well, this is the main roster. This is where you need to show fans who don't know who you are, who don't watch NXT, and have no idea who and what you are, give us what works, or what may have worked in NXT, try to translate it to the main roster. And so far, they have not done that. Outside of a backstage party that Roman Reigns ended up bombing with Shane McMahon and Drew McIntyre, we don't know anything about them. They're outright boring. And that's just a fact. That's just a fact. They may be extremely technically sound, well-oiled tag team, but they're boring. And can that change? Of course. I'm not saying you can't. But that's why I said the Usos are probably going to take the belts here to give the tag team championships a little bit more of a polish, if you will, instead of just kind of being buried with these two that are just presented as a generic. They just look like wrestler A and wrestler B. They do. I'm not even going to apologize for that. If you know nothing about them, you didn't follow them, and they just come up to the main roster, they look like wrestler A and wrestler B. They do. So that's what I'm saying, is there's little to no reaction when they come out. They put on very good matches. I'm not disputing that. But they're just kind of there. So there needs to be some kind of depth again with these guys. I don't know. Add something to their entrance. Give them even a promo that they are presented, or WWE presents to the audience while they're making their entrance. You know how they have those like pre-cut promos? Even those silly things. But right now we're getting not much of anything. So, I don't know. They kept the belts on them, and maybe there's a longer-term plan with those two. And I hope there is, because they've got the wrestling down. They've got the in-ring part of it mostly down. They just don't have a whole lot of character development. And that can come with time, but right now there's just not much there. So I was surprised. I really was. Okay, next was Aleister Black versus Cesaro. I really enjoyed this. I thought that this was... these two gelled very well. Very well. I hope in some way that this program can continue. Aleister Black as a full-fledged heel is nice. He's nice in that role. I think that Cesaro's entrance, by the way, in his infinite iteration of entrances in terms of his James Bond or his bar or his Antonio Cesaro entrance or whatever else he's done in his career, this one is the most interesting. It's very focused on him. It doesn't seem too gimmicky. It's got great music. I guess it depends on your taste in music, but I like the music that he comes out to. And it's somewhat simplistic, but seems kind of something like him, maybe, but we don't know who he is. So I'm gonna give it some time. I know that entrances don't make or break stars as a whole, but it's got to be impactful. It's got to be natural. And right now it seems to fit Cesaro and doesn't seem forced like some of his others did. I don't know, but I'm giving it a chance. Nonetheless, this match was very, very good. I like the amount of time they gave these guys. Black ended up beating Cesaro, which was the right move and what I called. It wasn't the right move because I made the call, but because Black is the one that's the focus here, not Cesaro so much. With all of the backstage promos they've given Black, it only made sense for him to continue his momentum and back up his words with a victory. And I'm fine with that. But Cesaro, man, there's so much you could do with this guy still. There really is. He is a monster in the ring. He's physical, and he can work with anybody and make anybody look great. So those are my thoughts on that. I really, really enjoyed this match. It was a very wrestling pure match. Not many gimmicks. Nice holds, nice counters. Very physical, tight, stiff work. I didn't see through a lot of their moves. I hope they get to do this again. I'll just say that. Okay, the handicap match for the SmackDown Women's Championship with Bayley versus Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. Bayley ended up defeating Cross and Bliss, with Bayley getting the victory by flying off the top rope with her elbow. That was Kairi Sane's insane elbow? I don't know. But it was an elbow from Bayley with a pinfall on Nikki Cross. So Bayley retains. I didn't like this. I think it was, I don't know. Right now, I think that it would have been more entertaining to see Cross and Bliss as co-SmackDown Women's Champions rather than Bayley on her very vanilla title run right now that she's on. But maybe there's something long-term for Bayley. I mean, I predicted that Sasha was going to be interfering, costing Bayley the match, and ending up with a co-SmackDown Women's Champion, only to end up with Sasha versus Bayley in a match at SummerSlam. I was wrong in both counts. We did not see Sasha, and we did not get a Bayley loss. We got a Bayley victory. So it wasn't a great match, I'll be honest. It really wasn't anything, you know, stand out. But I like the team of Alexa and Nikki because I don't know the end game here. We don't know if Alexa's going to turn on Nikki or Nikki's going to turn on Alexa, or they never turn on each other and they actually become legitimate best friends and turn babyface. I mean, you don't know. You don't know. But it was just a convincing win by Bayley, and I don't like where Alexa's headed. I feel more for Alexa here than I do anybody else, because Alexa was women's champion. She was the very first SmackDown and Raw women's champion. Didn't hold them at the same time like Becky did, but she still was the first. And they billed her as a top competitor, and yet she's losing and losing and losing, and I'm not feeling it. I want Alexa to be the focal point at some point in the near future. And of course, Charlotte is also looming. So God knows that when Charlotte returns, she will be instantly inserted into the title picture. All right. Then we get the triple threat tag team match for the tag team SmackDown Live Tag Team Championships with the New Day versus the Planet's Champions versus Heavy Machinery. I thought this was a very good match wrestling wise, and surprised that Daniel Bryan and Rowan ended up dropping the belts here, particularly to the New Day, who don't need anything. I don't know if they just want to put all the gold in New Day because this is the time to do it, or I don't know the agenda here. I think that they were good SmackDown Tag Team Champions. At the same time, I don't think that Heavy Machinery is ready. I was fine with them waiting until WrestleMania or even beyond. I don't need Heavy Machinery as champions yet. They're simply not ready. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I don't like the fact that Daniel Bryan and Rowan were really cut short on their tag team run, given less mic time every week on SmackDown Live, which is where they flourished and where Daniel Bryan was able to turn the fans against him miraculously. And now they're just kind of floating out there as a tag team with no gold, and it just doesn't feel right. So with New Day, I think the fans may start to resent New Day. I mean, WWE has to be very careful here. If they're holding all the gold and they hold it for a long period of time, fans are going to get very, very sick of it very quickly. And particularly when you have the New Day who have held the tag team championships now 6 times. New Day has held the belts 6 times. So don't forget that when Big E comes out and does his introduction in your city, it's 6-time SmackDown Live Tag Team Champion. So there you go. But I just, while the match was very good and all three teams did well, the finish as I'm reading it, because I'm trying to jog my memory, but Bryan ran the turnbuckles and tried for moonsault. Big E caught him, tagged in Woods, and together New Day delivered Midnight Hour to score the win, and there's 6 tag team title reigns. So Daniel Bryan was also the one to take the pinfall, which is even more startling. You'd think that Rowan would be the one to take the pinfall if indeed you're going to have them lose. And you could have had them beat Heavy Machinery. Instead, you had them actually beat the tag team champions instead of the three-way or the triple threat rules, which, don't worry, every single time there's a triple threat, which is every single week on Raw and every single pay-per-view, WWE has to remind you of what that means. Don't forget, that means the champion is at a disadvantage because they don't need to be involved in the decision to lose the match. Really? Wow. Well, thank God they remind me every time. I mean, I don't know what I would do because it's easily forgettable, and I can't remember that rule. It's a tough one. So yeah, so we'll see where this goes. I really thought that they would retain here. AJ Styles versus Ricochet for the United States Championship. Good, not blow away. there was something missing from this match, but it was very good wrestling-wise. We had Styles beating Ricochet for the win, and it was, of course, due to interference, Anderson interference, and ended up with a Styles clash from the middle rope, and Styles wins the championship. The whole match just never felt like it quite got going. It felt like a whole bunch of moves, like cool maneuvers and counters, but no flow. Like they knew what the spots they wanted to do, but forgot that they needed to present a wrestling match with a story. So they just had all the cool stuff they wanted to do and went, oh, right, we have to all make this make sense. And a lot of it just kind of didn't. I think that in time that these two could make this a very long-term great rivalry, and they'll probably get better with time. But it was missing the psychological piece of it. It was just kind of like, oh, I'm going to do a super cool move to you, but don't worry about selling it because you're going to get up in 5 seconds and do your cool move to me. There was just no flow to it. It felt very disconnected from my emotions, even though the moves were cool and the counters were cool and they're super great athletes, both men. It just was missing something. And it was, I think, emotion, and I think their lack of storytelling to put the moves in a cohesive manner to make me feel like they're telling me a story and bringing me on their journey. It just was missing that. And I think it could come with time. All right. Moving on to Kevin Owens and Dolph Ziggler. I mean, what are you going to say? This is Kevin Owens hitting a stunner for the win. And Owens cutting another pipe bomb on Shane, really not giving us a ton more, but it was just a reminder of Kevin Owens is here, and they are pushing him. That's what we're getting over. We're getting over the stunner. We're getting over Kevin Owens as a babyface and giving a message to fans. Hey, we hear you. Let's push Owens. That's essentially what the message was here, and I'm fine with it. Samoa Joe versus Kofi Kingston. Not as good as I thought it would be. I'll be honest. Joe ended up getting Trouble in Paradise from out of nowhere to have Kofi retain. So Kofi retains on his miraculous journey as WWE champion. I've had a feeling that Kofi would retain here. And my only hope is that if SummerSlam comes around and Joe is still the opponent, Joe could take off there. And he could be the one there to finally dethrone Kofi, which I'm ready for. I'll be honest, I'm ready for it. We all had the fun ride from Elimination Chamber to WrestleMania, and the story's been told, and I'm ready. I'm ready for WWE to get off the Kofi train. I don't know if WWE is ready for WWE to get off the Kofi train. But again, this isn't me flipping, flopping. Oh, see, you wanted this, but now you don't want it. I'm not the fickle fan. I'm the fan that just knows when it's time, I believe, to move on. Before the fans start to resent your champion. And the reason is not because Kofi's been champion way too long. Oh my God. It's only been what, like three, four months. That's not the point. The point is that Samoa Joe is the opponent, and Samoa Joe is highly respected among the majority of fans. If you know his body of work, and many fans believe that he has been mistreated throughout his entire WWE career in terms of booking. So when you have that, it's similar to what Kofi went through on a smaller scale and what a lot of other stars go through, that when fans decide they want somebody to be champion and WWE is not getting behind them, the fans try to organically create a movement for him. And this could be the case with Samoa Joe, who fans know is not a young guy anymore. He is limited in time. He's at the back end of his prime, still in his prime, but kind of heading down, and they need to pull the trigger now. And I think fans feel that. And if Samoa Joe doesn't get a true big win here in the next year, I don't think WWE is ever going to take him and give him that monster heel run that he could have and deserves, quite frankly. All right. So we're going to take a quick break for the sponsor of the show. And then when we get back, I'm going to talk about Monday Night Raw, which I really enjoyed the show. From top to bottom, were there some hokey things? Of course. Things I didn't truly love? Of course. I mean, but overall, it was a show that was concise, easy to follow, had a big hook for you at the end, and was overall just structurally sound. So I'm going to give you my details on that Bray Wyatt's debut, Brock Lesnar, right after this.
Hello, I'm Bradley Panic, the host of a new comedy show called The Panic Attack Podcast. I think comedy helps bring humor to our everyday realities. Join me as I do just that. We'll discuss comedy, my journey into stand-up comedy, music, politics, sports, life, and just about anything else. Follow the show on all social media platforms at TPA Comedy. Subscribe to the Panic Attack podcast on iTunes and all major platforms. And I look forward to sharing my world with you all.
Okay, welcome back, guys. Thank you for staying here. And there's one thing, you know, during the break I was thinking about this. That I was gonna start off with Brock Lesnar. But one little thing, as I was reviewing some of the news feeds, during the match that Alexa Bliss had on Raw, which was a fatal four-way elimination match between herself, Naomi, Natalya, and Carmella, and the winner would face Becky Lynch at SummerSlam. And during that crowd, or during the match, we had the crowd chant, "Boring, you suck, let's go Cena, Cena sucks, and this is awful." A few fans also noted that there was an AEW chant going on, which reportedly did not make the broadcast somehow. Weird. And Alexa Bliss responded to this. And we had a fan who tweeted that said, "They ask for the women to be taken seriously, and then they begin to chant that. Disappointing from the crowd." Lexi Kaufman, a.k.a. Alexa Bliss, said, "Just disrespectful." Really? Really? To quote The Miz. While I agree that it's not the ideal chant you want, fans purchase their tickets to say and chant what they feel. I don't think it was people just trying to be cool or it's trying to be trendy. It's how they felt in the moment. Do I agree with their assessment of the match? No. Was it a riveting match? No. Would I do that in an arena? No, I probably wouldn't. Because I actually understand that it would make those individuals in the match feel just feel kind of disappointed with themselves or you know, feel bad. And I don't know, maybe that's just me being a human being. But if the fans in the arena chanted that, deal with it. That's how they felt. They are paying money to see you. Regardless of what they're saying, you cannot, as a performer, allow it to affect you on a personal level. You just can't. Regardless of what they chant, they still paid to be there, which means they still paid to put money in your pocket. So let them say whatever they want. Because if they cheered for you, you're still getting paid the same amount as if they booed you and gave you those negative chants. So when Lexi Kaufman says, "Oh, just disrespectful." Oh, well, boo-hoo. I am all for the women of WWE. I think the women's division is absolutely, it's at the top of its game right now. Did that match warrant those chants? No. But you know what? This is not the Hall of Fame ceremony where you have those jerks chanting stuff and you know, catcalls in the middle of a speech. That's disrespectful. That's a place where you just shut your mouth. You cheer, you clap. Maybe you participate in a positive chant. Thank you, whoever. Thank you, Kurt. Thank you, Taker. Whatever. Maybe you chant in one more match. Those are the times that you know, when you're going to chant something, it's positive and positive only. And you sit and you be quiet. And you take that time to respect those wrestlers who gave you their bodies. But when you're in the middle of a storyline on Raw or SmackDown Live, that's the nature of the business. You can call it disrespectful. I call it entitled. You are entitled. And this is not me being a millennial. I'm entitled to everything because that's my generation. No. When you purchase the ticket, it's implied that you have the right to go in there and chant whatever you want to chant and boo whoever you want to boo and cheer whoever you want to cheer. Now, some of you are saying, "Oh, you can't say whatever you want. You can't yell fire. You can't say you have a bomb." Well, no kidding. I'm saying within reason, in the context of wrestling, you have the right to go in and say and do whatever you want. And if you say, "Oh, it's disrespectful," and get mad at the fans, grow up. I mean, really, understand the business you're in. Understand the freaking business you're in. And I love Alexa Bliss. And I think Lexi Kaufman is a very good human being. I really believe that. But this is not specific to Alexa, Lexi Kaufman. This is something that I've seen throughout the years. Performers getting angry at fans who chant this is boring or whatever. Maybe to them it is. And they have the right to chant that. Because they bought a damn ticket to see you. And they're lining your pockets whether they chant that or they don't. There. End rant. Let's move on to something better. And let's move on to Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman, who opened Raw. And they came out, and Paul Heyman was at the top of his game. And came out and for all intents and purposes, gloated about what had happened at the pay-per-view. And he definitely alluded to the fact that, hey, in case you haven't heard, I'm the man with all the stroke around here, so I'm going to tell you what match we have to determine who Brock Lesnar is going to face at SummerSlam. So I'm surprised they brought this out on air. I was hoping they would keep these two worlds separate because Paul Heyman, I don't think, can be an authority figure. Nor should he be, because he's also with Brock Lesnar as his advocate. But Paul, people know that he's actually the head of creative, and in a world of fantasy, how do you mix that? And Paul Heyman did an okay job of it. I would just not like to see this continue. I really don't want Paul Heyman as an authority figure. I need him as the advocate. That's fine. It just becomes a little bit weird as a fan, because I don't want to be reminded that this is a scripted show. I just don't. And I said it once, I'll say it again. It's like being reminded during a movie you're watching something that's not real. So I loved it that Paul Heyman came out, though. I mean, he announced the cross-branded top 10 all-star battle royal on Raw. And nice. And also, you got promos from the guys in the match to tell you what it means to them and what they're going to do. Thank you. Simple. Thank you. It's what we needed. It's what was what the whole match warranted. It added to the match, added to the urgency of the match. Well done all the way around on that. So, again, a great promo by Paul Heyman. And more just kind of menacing looks, paying a guy millions of dollars to stand there and bounce around and make weird smiles and stare into the camera with his yellow eyes. I don't know if he has jaundice or whatever, but I'm not making fun of him. When you look at Brock Lesnar's eyes, the white part of his eyes are not white, or is not white. It's yellow. It's got a yellow tint to it. I'm serious. I'm sure that he's not actually sick, but it sure looks like he has jaundice. I'll just say that. Okay. So Ricochet and the Usos versus the Revival and Bobby Roode. Again, a 2 out of 3 falls match. The 2 out of 3 falls happy lately. I don't know if it's just kill time or what. But we had the Usos and Ricochet win. I'm fine. Ricochet is on a rocket ship right now, regardless of losing the championship to AJ Styles. He is the new toy that Vince McMahon has designated. They certainly have alluded to that. And Ricochet is very good. He's a good-looking dude. I said this before. He's super athletic, decent on the mic. I'm for this ride right now. Strap me in. Let's see how far I can go. Viking Raiders versus some jobbers. Viking Raiders win. I'm just going to move on. I'm serious. There's just nothing to say there. Drew McIntyre versus Cedric Alexander. Cedric Alexander wins via roll-up. WWE's favorite finish now, a roll-up. You know, you could do 14 power moves and, you know, hit each other with barbed wire and through tables, but can't get out of that roll-up. That roll-up is just deadly. And they are just roll-up and 2 out of 3 falls happy. But Drew McIntyre loses to Cedric Alexander. I guess as a little bit of a boost to Cedric, because you could have Drew recover from this. He's pretty rubber. I think that you could get him out of this, and I'm fine with it. Eventually, Cedric Alexander is going to catch an ass whooping from Drew McIntyre. That could come as early as next week. Okay, Samoa Joe versus Finn Balor. Samoa Joe wins, but it ends up with Finn Balor getting the last laugh, hitting the coup de grace, and Joe rolls out of the ring again. With a roll-up. Good God. A roll-up. It's almost as bad as when they had the DQ finish happy matches. Really. Okay. So then, as Finn Balor is celebrating inside the ring, we get his music kind of going to black. it stops, and Bray Wyatt's character appears. I think it was very well done. You know, things just kind of slowed down and stopped, and I hope that's how they continue to present him, interrupting people like that where the music fades out, and then things just go black. I don't want him being Undertaker. I want him being Bray Wyatt. I want him being The Fiend. So I enjoyed that. And Finn Balor is his first target. Good. You know, I said he had to be in main event. Well, he's in with the guy that was a Universal Champion. He's a former Universal Heavyweight Champion. And Finn Balor has also been kind of on the downslide, and I think he will be at the end of this program too. Bray Wyatt has to come in hot, blazing hot, roll through people, and see if the fans take to it. What's interesting is, you know, the fans in Long Island said the holy chants, and that's great. I mean, that's a great reaction. That's what you want from Bray Wyatt. Is he really going to be presented as a heel, though? Fans have been clamoring to see him. Finn Balor is beloved by the fans, but Bray Wyatt is the new returning star that has been repackaged. So, are they really going to boo him? I wouldn't. Finn Balor right now is going nowhere. Bray Wyatt has been infinitely more interesting. You could have Bray Wyatt in a program with Finn for a couple of months. This clearly is ending up in a match at SummerSlam. I think that's where they're going here. That's fine. That's fine. Bray Wyatt, I think, will win. My guess is that next week, The Fiend stays home and we get the Bray Wyatt that's the sweater-wearing, turtleneck-wearing kids show host, the twisted kids show host version of Bray Wyatt coming out and talking to Finn Balor. I think that's what we will get. That's my guess. But the mask on Bray Wyatt, cool. The lighting, awesome. I was kind of disappointed that he kept his same finish of the Sister Abigail, because Sister Abigail is apparently not just dead, but her soul has been burned by Randy Orton. I would have liked a new finish to really round out the new character. And we can still get that, but I didn't want Sister Abigail. I didn't want any ties back to the nightmares that were the old character of Bray Wyatt, the Eater of Worlds. I mean, please. I would like a new finish. So, WWE, that's my official request to you. Outside of that, man, this was a great way to introduce Bray Wyatt into the audience. A very unique way of doing it, with Finn Balor's music just kind of screeching to a halt. Loved it. Very well done all the way around. Awesome. Okay, some other highlights from Raw. I'm not going to go through every single segment here. But we had an Alexa Bliss versus Natalya versus Kamala again versus Naomi, and ended up being Natalya who's going to face Becky Lynch. And you have it seems to be invigorated Natalya, and that's what we needed. We need a Natalya that is going to be different, is going to be, has an edge, not just this backstage cat ear wearing, show you pictures of my cats, I'm the best there is, there was, and there ever will be, ripping off my uncle's taglines. I need Natalya, defined as Natalya, without the cutesy cats. Tell me who you are. Give me a serious line. And she delivered. She delivered, and Becky Lynch did too. Right now, that program has me more interested than I thought it would with a 2-minute promo that they had. After Natalya won, I said, what? You know, I figured Alexa was going to win and face off against Becky Lynch, which was not the case. And it's Natalya. But the promo that they had against each other, very good. Loved it. Real. The intensity felt real. That's what I love the most. Okay. Moving on to the next segment of Monday Night Raw. And that was Drake Maverick's honeymoon with his wife. Boy, did they push PG Edge here. I mean, you had Drake Maverick essentially wearing the 24/7 title as underwear. And his wife was wearing almost next to nothing under the robe. And R-Truth predictably interrupts in a serving card of sorts. And I think John Cena did that to Edge one time, didn't he? I mean, it's been done before, but whatever. Recycled storylines are fine. And the referee counted the three. R-Truth ends up winning. And we get a continued rivalry with these two. And have Drake Maverick's wife just pushed to the side as number two to the 24/7 championship. And that's fine. I think that right now this rivalry is is what it is. It's what it can and should be. They're going bonkers with the creative, as I knew they would, because the creative is limitless for this championship. So it's fine. I really can't complain about it. It's not meant to be serious, and I don't take it seriously. Okay. The main event, with Brock Lesnar's championship opportunity at stake, for the Universal Championship at SummerSlam, facing Brock Lesnar, it ended up being Seth Rollins getting the victory. And it came down to Randy Orton and Seth Rollins. I would have been fine on it, honestly, with either. I think fans echoed that sentiment, with fans cheering for Randy Orton. And I think that's out of respect to Randy, who has seemingly not lost a step. I mean, I think that has a lot to do with his match style, the fact that he doesn't work a whole lot of house shows, and that he preserves his body and doesn't take crazy big bumps, is all plays a factor in Randy Orton maintaining his performance level. So we had Seth Rollins win, and then Brock Lesnar come out. I'm sure that he was pissed that he had to stay to the end of the show and sit there and go, "What do you mean, Paul? I have to stay to the end of the show? I can't just go back to the hotel room at 8:30 after my segment?" So I'm sure he loved that. But nonetheless, it is Seth Rollins versus Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship at SummerSlam. And that should be intriguing. I'm looking forward to this more than most, because if we get that version of Seth Rollins that was shown at Extreme Rules when Baron Corbin hit the end of days on Becky Lynch, that's the Seth Rollins that I want to see against Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. And we could get that. I think it'll be a very different style of match. I don't want to see, like I said before, I'm done with the German F5. I need something more. Germans are cool, I guess, but not when it's the same formula over and over and over and over again. So I'm intrigued by the match. I think it'll be high quality, and I don't know if Seth's going to regain the championship here. That remains to be seen. I mean, we are about 4 weeks away from it, so we have time. And certainly my thoughts can change between now and then. But this was interesting. At the end of the match, Heyman gets on the mic and says that he announces that the winner of this match is Seth Rollins. But Seth came on the mic and said, "Paul, I'm done with you. I'm talking directly to Brock Lesnar." That's what I liked. At the end, too, Lesnar goes to ringside and he hits the steel chair. A steel chair on the apron and ends up backing off as Ron goes off the air. So that was interesting too, that it wasn't just a clean ending to Raw. There was that feeling of, well, wait a minute, there's 15 seconds left of Raw. There's something about to happen. What's going to happen? That's the way a show should feel. How is it that every single week things end perfectly in a show that's supposed to be unpredictable? Exactly when Raw is scheduled to go off the air, it goes off the air with nothing left to happen. This left a little bit of like, whoa, what's going on here? That was nice. That was a nice little touch. Nice little touch that they have not done in a very, very long time. A nice little touch from production, the production team. And maybe Heyman had something to do with this too, but it added that little bit of like, whoa, wait a minute. We have to watch to the very end. Smart booking, smart television production, all of that. So overall, guys, I thought it was a very good week of WWE. Very good week of WWE. I don't have a whole lot of rants. You heard one, but that was just a little bit of Alexa Bliss and her disrespectful comment. I thought it was a very good week. And maybe, and hopefully, it continues tonight on SmackDown Live, as SmackDown Live actually just ended. I don't know anything that happened, but don't worry, you'll get my review tomorrow. So, guys, thank you so much for joining me. I mean, I try to give you my most honest analysis. I do not work for WWE. I have no affiliation with them. I have no vested interest in them. That's what I love, because I give it to you straight. And I appreciate everybody who listens to this show. You can catch me 4 times a week, Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and it's all for you for free. And by the way, if you want an ad-free experience, you hate the ads, go to patreon.com/WWE podcast. You can get a completely ad-free experience for every single one of my shows for just $1. I'm serious. $1. Oh, he's looking for my money. No, I'm trying to alleviate everybody complaining about ads, which, look, I admit, ads in podcasts can be annoying, but there's solutions to that. Super easy solutions. Number one, you go to the Patreon, and for $1, you can get every single show ad free. Or two, there's that skip ahead button in there. Everybody's got that 30 seconds plus skip ahead. It's a magic button. So solutions there. And I feel you. I'm with you on that. Like, I listen to some podcasts that feel like they're mostly ads, which I try not to do with this show. But hey, you got to keep the lights on. You got to be smart and monetize your show, man. If you ever become, you know, super big into podcasting, and I don't believe I'm super big yet. I mean, I'm obviously that's my goal. And I you know, I'm relying on you guys to help me get there. But who the hell wouldn't want to monetize their show, right? I mean, that's just, it'd be silly not to. It'd be silly not to. And you guys, I have a lot to thank you guys for making the show as successful as it has been so far. And there's a long way to go, and I know you guys will get there with me. It's going to be a fun ride because we all love wrestling. That's what this show's about. That's what the show is for. It's a podcast by a fan for fans. So thank you, everybody who listens. Thank you to the new listeners, your old listeners, everybody in between. And check out my website at WWEpodcast.com, on Twitter at the WWE Podcast, and, of course, on Instagram and Facebook, and anywhere you find podcasts, I will be there. So, oh, and I almost forgot, I do have an email question that I need to answer. And this is from Ashley, and she asks me about Brock's title reign. Realistically, where do you see Brock Lesnar's title reign going? It's clear that he's been given the title yet again because he pulls viewers, but in doing so, he's killing any momentum that Seth Rollins had left. For me, Lesnar having the Universal title can only be a bad thing for the company in the long run, so I guess my question is, do you think Brock having the belt is a good or bad thing for the company? Thanks for the podcast. They helped me get through the night shifts here in the UK. Well, thank you so much. I'm glad I can get you through the night shifts. Yeah, being at work can sometimes be a drag, and I'm glad that I can maybe take your mind off things or make time go faster. So that is a pretty cool deal. So to answer your question before I head out here, I think that Brock having the belt is a double-edged sword. I know it's an in-between answer, but it's a complicated answer. Because Brock Lesnar holding the belt does draw more viewers, I believe, to the product. Because it's Brock freaking Lesnar, right? Brock Lesnar is a household name. You know who Brock Lesnar is. People who don't know what even wrestling is know who Brock Lesnar is. Does he have the global reach that The Rock does, or Stone Cold Steve Austin or Hulk Hogan? Probably not to that level. But Brock Lesnar is a megastar. There's just no other way to put it. So having him hold that Universal Championship hostage once again is a good thing if the booking is that he holds the championship for a short period of time. It will be a bad thing for the company if they decide to do what they did with him in holding the belt for a year, only to have Roman Reigns be the conqueror to beat him at WrestleMania or whatever the plan originally was. This needs to be a short-term vision to have Brock Lesnar get over that next guy. And if they envision Seth Rollins as that next guy, then having Seth Rollins, Brock Lesnar put over Seth Rollins at SummerSlam is the right thing to do and is good for the company. So I hope that answered your question. He may not, I don't think he honestly killed any momentum Seth had, because Seth Rollins, as I said, was kind of bland for the last month or so as champion. And this might have reinvigorated him. And as I said, if they give me the version of Seth Rollins that was shown at Extreme Rules, that's the Seth I want. It could be a blessing in disguise for Seth, who could get a slight tweak in his character that shows us more intensity and has the ability to snap the way he did and has never shown us before at Extreme Rules. So that's where I think, yeah, he took the belt from Seth, but this could reinvigorate his character, even if his championship is gone, and put him on a hell-bent mission to take down Brock Lesnar once and for all. So there, I think I answered your question. So thanks so much for the question. Hope your night shift is going well. And for everyone else, I hope your night or day or morning or whatever time of day it is for you is going well too. And as I said, we'll be back tomorrow with the SmackDown Live review, and then Thursday with the co-host talking about everything in between. So guys, thanks so much again. And as always, I'll talk to you next time.